You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
You're listening to the Stable Management Podcast, where we discuss the barn management topics that you're passionate about.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Stable Management Podcast. Our goal is to bring you a real-world look into the parts of horse farm management that you love or hate most, such as stall bedding, farm equipment, and pasture maintenance. During each bi-monthly episode, we'll be joined by an expert guest who shares their experiences with and perspectives on an important stable management topic.
Even under the best circumstances, travel is stressful for horses. We've all been there, stuck on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere. You can make the journey knowing that U.S. Rider is there for you. Get peace of mind on the road with U.S. Rider's nationwide 24/7 roadside assistance coverage for both you and your horse. Join today at usrider.org.
I'm your host, Haley Peffer, and my guest today is Dr. Jonathan Yardley of The Ohio State University. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
So our topic today is one that I'm sure basically every barn manager has dealt with at one point or another, and that is equine gastric ulcers. We're going to specifically talk about diagnosing and treating them with Dr. Yardley today. So Dr. Yardley, could you just start by telling me, when a horse presents with vague signs such as poor performance or attitude changes, what should raise a barn manager's suspicion that this could be gastric ulcers?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And slightly a little difficult to answer based upon, there was a recent study out that looked at, like, quote unquote, common clinical signs of horses with gastric ulcers. And I'll just use the example of, like, when you girth up a horse, they kind of get pissy and, like, pin their ears and they're just kind of angry. And a lot of us associate that with gastric ulcers. Well, in this study that they did, 50% of those horses had no gastric ulcers. So it was just kind of behavioral. So for me, when I'm thinking about a horse with gastric ulcers, I want to make sure the more common things have been, like, ruled out. So making sure the horse isn't lame, making sure the horse doesn't have an underlying infection. And those would be kind of my two big things, making sure there's not another metabolic disease like Cushing's or EMS that could be playing a part in performance changes or attitude changes. Before I scope the horse. So I usually just kind of do a good exam first, see if the horse is lame, if it's in performance. And then if all those things, like, check all those boxes, then I usually will recommend scoping the horse to determine if it has gastric ulcers.
Awesome. Yeah. And could you just walk us through the current best practices for diagnosing ulcers when you suspect them?
Yeah. So the best practice is an endoscope. So for that, we come to your farm. A lot of practitioners have these. It's a 3-meter, so really long, basically camera that we insert into their, through their nose, into their esophagus, and down in their stomach, and we just take a good look around to see what's going on. And this is super important to do because you want to be able to differentiate between squamous ulcers and glandular ulcers. So squamous ulcers live on this border that we call the margoplicatus. So that is the cell type is slightly different between these two, between this border, and the acid is in the lower half of the stomach. And when the horse is working or running and the acid kind of sloshes around, we think it goes up on the other part of the stomach above the margoplicatus, which isn't used to getting acid bathed in it. And that is where we typically used to see ulcers. With more research and understanding and technology, now we also know there's glandular ulcers. And glandular ulcers are more difficult to diagnose. They are at the end of the stomach, right before it goes into the small intestine. I don't think when I went to veterinary school in 2006, when I graduated, that we were diagnosing these. I don't think we knew how to get to that part of the stomach. But now it's a common occurrence, and I train all our trainees, so our interns and residents, they can all do this very easily and get to the glandular part of the stomach and make the diagnosis. And why this is super important to be able to differentiate between these is the treatments are different. So you do hear a lot of clients who are like, oh, I just gave my horse X, Y, and Z medication, but the horse didn't get better. And it's like, well, A, did the horse actually have ulcers? I don't know. Did you look? And B, what kind of ulcers did it have? Because the treatments can be vastly different. And some horses don't even respond to the current therapies that we use. So we need to recheck them. So the gastroscopy is really the only way to make the diagnosis. And I would truly recommend a follow-up gastroscopy to see if the medication worked. And then you can go into the prevention stage of ulcers.
Yeah, I think that's great that you mentioned the importance of actually diagnosing which type of ulcers it is. That's something that I hear often in the barn. People don't quite understand the importance of that and might want to just treat the horse however they think is best. So I think that's good that you're pointing out the importance there. So you kind of touched on the difference between the two types of ulcers. Can you talk a little bit about how the distinction matters when it comes to treatment and specifically management for these barn managers who are trying to maybe adjust their management tactics for the horse, depending on what they've been diagnosed with?
Yeah, I think we know we have more evidence as to the treatment differences than the management. But management's going to be, we'll cover all ulcers, but treatment can be different. So if you have say squamous ulcers, the treatment is going to be your typical omeprazole, so Gastroguard. So you're going to use a FDA labeled product, Gastroguard, and that's going to treat the ulcers of that level, usually for 28 days. Glandular ulcers are more difficult to treat. A lot of times we have to put those horses on sucrophate and omeprazole, and sometimes even misoprostol. And when they fail all of those, we can even put them on dexamethasone, which is very counterintuitive because those dexamethasone will actually cause ulcers. But it is believed that potentially some of these resistant ulcers in the glandular area are having this bad inflammatory process. So like very last ditch efforts, people will put them on dexamethasone. I have never personally done that. I've just read about it. I don't think I'd be comfortable doing that, knowing all the side effects of dexamethasone and making the ulcers potentially worse. So the omeprazole is going to be your kind of go-to 28 days. And then if it's glandular, definitely sucrophate plus or minus misoprostol. So kind of different treatments, different lengths of treatments. There is going to be in the pipeline, I think from like a year from now, there's going to be another a true generic Gastroguard that will come to market. So hopefully that brings down the cost. I understand, you know, that as a branded name, Gastroguard is expensive. So there'll be a little more competition in the market. So we'll kind of see what the price points do with that. I will recommend, and I know it is cheaper to get compounded omeprazole. So from a pharmacy, We are leery of that because there are studies out there that show that the correct amount of drug is not labeled, is not actually in the product. So they're just kind of wasting their money. Another thing that's interesting about omeprazole itself is that it is acid labile. So what does that mean? That means that when omeprazole gets into acid, which is in the stomach, and the reason there's acid in the stomach is because that's how it kind of like kills the bacteria in our food and that kind of stuff. Like it's a protective mechanism. That acid actually will degrade or destroy the omeprazole. So the omeprazole has to be bound in another molecule to get by the acid. And that is why Gastroguard has been off label for quite a while now. And only one company is even close to coming to market with the product to figure out how to do this and get FDA approval. So knowing that a large pharmaceutical company is having a hard time copying a product, I don't put much stock, honestly, in the compounded medication. So just to be aware of that, yes, it's cheaper, but what are you getting and is it working?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I think that if maybe you use a product that's not working, you might end up spending more in the long run to actually treat your horse, make him feel better.
100%. Yeah. Yeah.
From your perspective, what are the most common management-related factors that you see for these barns or just individual horses who might deal with recurrent ulcer cases? Is there something that they're doing that could be causing this?
Yeah, that. So it's interesting. I'm going to tell a small little anecdote. So when I was a vet student a long time ago, I did some research down at Oklahoma, the other OSU, or one of the other OSUs. And I helped with a ulcer study. And we had these teaching horses who lived out in the fields at Oklahoma State. And we were giving them actually electrolytes. We were dosing them at the same dose you would for an endurance riding. And those, not surprising, those electrolytes actually cause ulcerations. They're very caustic. But anyways, when we would bring these horses in from the field, half of them would have ulcers, which is like crazy that, you know, these horses living in a field have ulcers. And just recently at our herd here at the Ohio State, the OSU, we brought in some teaching horses who, again, live in a field, eat round bales all day. They get used infrequently for the students to learn on. And we were teaching one of our trainees on, how to perform gastroscopy. And two out of the five horses had ulcers just living in the field. So, you know, we talk about the worst way to feed a horse, the worst way to make ulcers, and we know how to do that. Feeding them infrequently, high grain diets, high stress environment, that's a perfect recipe for ulcers. And that's, you look at the racehorse data and those old studies by Merck, like 90% of those thoroughbred racehorses had ulcers because, you know, we're feeding them. Those horses are exercising, you know, 2 miles a day. They need a lot of calories. So they're eating high grain meals. That high grain ferments in their stomach, causing the pH changes. That's a good way to give a horse ulcers, so the more sweet feed. Infrequent feeding also can lead to ulcers because the acid is just kind of sitting there in the stomach. And in high stress environments, trailering, stuff like that. So we know how to cause ulcers very easily in some of our management practices. But that being said, like thinking about our anecdotally, the horses that are living in these fields with ulcers, sometimes you wonder, like I question sometimes, like, How bad are these ulcers, right? Like, are these horses really that sick? And if we see them, we treat them. Like, we treated these horses because it's important, you know, you make a diagnosis. But are they always a rate limiting step in their performance?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So you talked a little bit about treatment and why it's important to choose an effective treatment. Have the treatment protocols for equine gastric ulcers necessarily evolved in recent years, or have you seen it stay pretty consistent?
It stayed pretty consistent. We know now that like Gastroguard has to be given, you know, on an empty stomach and a fasting state. So we're getting better with the timing, which makes this product very hard to give, right? You're supposed to give it before you feed the horse. So you have to give it to them and then go through the barn, and then the horse is really angry, not getting fed while you wait for the drug to work. So we know some of the timing of it. I do think that misoprostol is a newer drug that we've been using. It's been around for a long time. It used to be used to treat hindgut ulcers or right dorsal colitis. And now we've been using it for glandular ulcers. So that's kind of our treatment that we go to. One of the newer treatments that is out there is... it is a compounded product, but it is an injectable omeprazole. And we have used it on horses that don't like to get Gastroguard. Like they don't, you can't tube them very easily or, you know, put a syringe in their mouth. Or the management is just of the barn cannot give these horses omeprazole on a fasting stomach. We've had success with the product. It is about the same. It's not cheaper. It might actually be a little more expensive than given the Gastroguard. But it is another alternative. The product lasts between 5 and 7 days. It's in a sesame seed or peanut oil substrate. So it's like really thick and the drug gets released over time when you give it. There are some side effects. The horses do swell, have some injection site swellings associated with the drug. But it is another alternative for horses that we have had a difficult time with the management of giving the drug. So that is something you could ask your veterinarian about.
Definitely. And something that I personally have wondered about. You know, I think we're all short on time as horse owners, and you know, the treatment protocol with omeprazole can be a little bit time consuming, and as you said, some horses might not really tolerate it well, especially if they see everybody else getting fed and they can't.
Oh, yeah.
How much does it affect the medication if you give it and you do not allow enough time? I know it's something that I personally don't want to mess around with if you're going to spend so much on treatment, but for some people, maybe they are curious to know.
So if you're having time crunching, as it is as a thing, it's hard to give the horse a medication on an empty stomach, but really you are decreasing absorption between 50% and 60%. So 40% of that active drug is getting to the horse. I don't know about you, but like if you, you know, I don't like to burn money, but that's a good way to burn money, taking a 50% reduction on what I just bought. So yeah, I for those people, I do think the injectable might be a good solution.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think if I'm going to, you know, put the time and money into treating my horse, I definitely want it to be as effective as possible.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. It's not cheap.
So something else that we often get asked about is feeding horses who either currently have gastric ulcers or maybe have a history of ulcers. So do you have any feeding strategies that you recommend to help the treatment be more effective and just in the long term prevent recurrence?
Yeah, the best thing to do is get the horse a slow feeder, hay bag. Don't set it up too high, especially if they have respiratory issues. But let them eat hay all day long. Let them be natural. The more time that the stomach spends empty, the more the acid will build up in the stomach and can slosh around and cause greater amount of ulcers. So you want to keep these horses consistently fed. It's also a good behavioral thing too, right? If you're feeding the horse a consistent hay, that's naturally what the horse should do. It could decrease stress in the barn or in with the horse. And the other thing too is alfalfa has higher amounts of calcium. So alfalfa is a great feed, a great hay also to feed the horse with ulcers. Decreasing your sweet feed. So sweet feed I talked about earlier with the racehorses, it ferments. It's a fermentable carbohydrate. That fermentation does lead to increased gastric ulcers also. So high grain diets are associated with it. So, you know, common sense dictates try to keep the horse as natural as possible, even though it's in the stalled environment.
For sure. And if you have a horse that's turned out more often, do you expect that being turned out maybe even 24/7 gives them, and if they have access to pasture, that they're getting what they need in terms of forage availability? Or is there a way to make sure that they are eating enough while they're out there 24/7? Because, you know, when they're in the stall, you can kind of monitor exactly how much they're eating, but it's really hard when they're out all the time.
Yeah, I think that's hard. I think the story I told about our teaching horses at both OSUs, like they had round bales out there and they could eat all the time, but they choose not to, right? They walk around, I don't know what they do, sleep or something, but, you know, and right now in Ohio, the ground is covered with a foot of snow, so they're not foraging right now at all. So yeah, putting hay out for them to eat outside, I guess, is the only alternative. So, but I think that being said, right, that ulcers can occur regardless. So I don't think the farm managers should blame themselves for a horse that has ulcers. I think you can try to do everything you can do to prevent them, but knowing that everything you might do still might not prevent them without treatment. So don't beat yourself up.
That's a really great point. I'm glad that you brought that up because I think a lot of people do think, you know, well, my horse, you know, I think I'm doing everything right, but he still has ulcers. So what do I do now? So that's a really good point. The other thing that we're probably most commonly asked is about supplements. There are tons of supplements out there for just about any problem, but how can horse owners evaluate the supplements available marketed for ulcer support, and how could they find a high quality product that would realistically fit into the treatment plan?
Yeah. So we get asked this question a lot, and usually my blunt response is don't do supplements, but because I'm being asked here, I will nuance some of this answer. So Purina Outlast Purina is a company that does do research. And I think they did publish this, but their Purina Outlast basically is a calcium-based product that had been shown to prevent the reoccurrence of ulcers. So not the treatment of. That goes back to having to scope your horse, right? Because I have a lot of clients that would be like, hey, doc, I put it on Outlast like you told me to. And I was like, yeah, that's great. But that doesn't treat the ulcers. That prevents the reoccurrence of ulcers. You got to be careful with how these things are worded. And then there's other stuff out there that, like, you look in the literature and, like, they're all, like, marginally good at best. So I think there was, like, a paper out with, like, aloe vera juice or something. It was huge amounts of aloe vera juice they were feeding these horses, like, way more than what people are doing. And that did serve as, like, a barrier to coat the stomach lining. But those horses still got ulcers. Like, it didn't treat anything. It might have helped prevent the reoccurrence. So I think there might be a beet pulp product out of England that had other stuff in it that, again, formed some sort of barrier. But I think overall, instead of wasting your money on these supplements, I would spend the money on diagnostics to determine if your horse has ulcers. Come up with a treatment plan with your veterinarian and then maybe put it on something that does have some evidence to prevent the reoccurrence of ulcers. That would be what I would recommend. Some of these products are so expensive, and you gotta remember, right? This is consumerism and branding at its best. Like, they are trying to take advantage of you as a client because they want you to spend your dollars with them. And I think it's sad. I think there's definitely papers out there that show that the placebo effect of some of these supplements was better than the supplement itself. And we just have to remember that these aren't FDA approved. These aren't even approved by anyone. Like, you know, Haley, you could make a supplement, market it, and you could sell it on Amazon and be amazing and Chewy and everywhere else, right? Like, there's no regulation in this market. It is the wild, wild west, and you have buyer beware.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's all the time we have for today, but it's been great talking with you today, Dr. Yardley. I'm so glad we were able to cover this very popular topic. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I love it. This is a very important topic for people, and it is a big issue in our horses. So yeah, let's see if we can make the diagnosis on these animals and get them treated so they're not in pain.
And thank you all for listening today. Please remember to like this podcast, subscribe, leave a review, and recommend the Stable Management Podcast to a friend.